is about to commence.
Yeah, good morning, North State, and welcome to Free Fire Radio on KCNR 1460. It's Carl and Linda Bott. Good morning. It is 7:07 in the morning. Our phone lines here are 605-4567. And we're streaming at KCNR1460.com. Linda is on assignment today. Oh, yes, Bob looks askance at me. Yes, it's true. Linda's on assignment this morning. So we will try to muddle through, and maybe we'll get a phone call from her later on today. We can always hope for that. But I am joined by Bad Bob.
And good morning.
Bad Bob, how are you doing today?
Remember the scene in, and I hope Dr. Godfrey's not listening, remember that scene in Marathon Man?
Yes.
The dental scene?
When he drilled into his front tooth?
Yeah.
Why would he drill into your front
tooth? He did not drill into my front tooth. And to be honest, Dr. Gottfried is a great guy and does excellent work. And under the circumstances, it was, you never like these things, but it's a necessity for some people. My wife, of course, has never had a filling in her life. Can you believe that?
I can believe that, So she brushes her teeth 12 times a day, probably. No, frankly, Dr. Farrell is my man of choice. Out there in Palo Cedro, because he's anytime you walk in there, you got Marine flag, and you've got everybody there is working there, they're happy, and it's just it's cool. So, Dr. Farrell out in Palo Cedro. What we've got today, we have the chief of police here on stage, Peter Hansen, will be here at 8 o'clock. We have some local businesses that are here chomping at the bit to get on here. We want to talk about a number of things that are happening in our state. And around the nation, we've had people talking to us a lot since we've had Roger Yeagle on from Trinity County, talking about the marijuana problems up there. We're looking at the marijuana problem, not in the sense that it's nothing against people that need marijuana for medicinal purposes. What the original law was written about. The problem is that up in Trinity County, people's rights are being trampled on. They don't have the right to live in peace and quiet anymore up there. They don't have the right to be able to walk around the woods they've been walking around their whole lives, because you've got people up from out of state, many from out of state, or many that don't live anywhere around here, buying up lots of land, fencing it off, tearing down the trees, rending the earth, and growing marijuana, turning dogs loose up there, and then gunshots. Roger, who is the county supervisor, and he works in his district, says he's hearing gunshots at 3 o'clock in the morning. 3 o'clock in the morning, these people are shooting. Now, this is, to me, is a form of terrorism. This is a form of terrorism to force people off their land or to keep people away from their product. This product that is supposed to help people, but they're using it to make millions off of. What were the legislators thinking of? Did they actually think people were just going to use marijuana for medicinal purposes? Look what it's led to. It's led to people that are innocent, people that have nothing to do with the marijuana culture. It's impacting on them. And what are authorities doing about it? When we asked the supervisor, it looks like the sheriff isn't doing a whole lot. It's being a little bit overrun. What's the state doing about it? What are the feds doing about it? Is anybody doing anything about it except just saying, just want to smoke a doobie, it's okay. Frankly, I am, again, disappointed in the state and federal authorities for letting people's lives be ruined by people growing marijuana in their area, in their suburbs, in the forest. And if you don't think this problem's coming down to us, you're crazy. Why can't it be regulated? The people that need marijuana for medicinal purposes, Why can't they have enough, and yet the rest of it being grown for millions of dollars in profit? And what part of this is the state of California? If you want to look at it purely in mercenary terms, which some people are doing, how much money are you making off this, California? Not much. Gotta take a break. Carl and the Bot, Free Fire Radio. KCNR 1460. I get started early this morning. We've got more. Clearly, News Talk Radio.
I can find me a girl who'll stay and won't play games behind me. I'll be just what I am.
Welcome back to Free Fire Radio. KCNR 1460. Carl and Linda Bot. Linda's on assignment today. Another clever way of her just out doing things that we need to have done that we just never get time to do. But she's listening. She's already called me a couple of times. So, our phone lines here are 605-4567. You know, the part about the marijuana up in Trinity County, that's we're not stopping with that. This is ridiculous. These are our neighbors. This, as Roger Yeagle says, you don't think it's going to stop up there. He says, coming to a neighborhood near you. That's right. They're taking it in the suburbs, my friends, and they've got 2 or 3 acres. They're growing there. Okay, let's go to the phones here. Al, good morning. You're on KCNR.
Good morning, sir. Listen, you were talking about the feds coming in and helping on this problem. You know, the feds are the worst offenders. I live down Coleman Hatchery Road. They blocked off access to hundreds and hundreds of acres of BLM, I'm sure thousands across the country. The Forestry Service is doing the same thing. The Fish and Game, PG&E and CalArt, you know, they're going to tear down a path. You know, they're part of the problem. They're not going to fix anything.
Well, you know, you're right, Al. You know, and to try and rely on the feds to do anything for us, I mean, we're trying to get a variety of people on the show that are so far being really recalcitrant about coming on talking about the power they have, you know.
Yeah,
the U.S.
Yeah, I'm just offended by it. I mean, just in Sierra Pacific and how they've done some of their lands, and, you know, 8 more kids killed in Afghanistan yesterday, and the people are sitting here, and they just have their apathetic. They do nothing. The people are just... You know, I'm just totally disgusted with the whole thing.
A lot of apathy there. Well, you know, that's what we have to do. We have to get upset. We have to come out and talk, like yourself, Al. It just says there, enough is enough. We need to make some changes here. What's going on? When did we lose our country? That's maybe a rhetorical question.
Man, I don't know, but you know what? I'm thinking it was decades ago now.
Well, you know, I think you're right. I think it started decades
ago. I'm thinking
ago.
Around Vietnam and Kennedy is when... The worm turned.
Things started changing.
We really lost control. Listen, I love your show. So keep up the great work.
Well, thank you so much. Thanks for calling. I don't know if Al's called before, but Al is a voice of what's going of the people out there. They've had enough. When did we lose control? When did we lose our voice? When did it become a political action committee? When did it become a lobbyist coming in here? If you remember what I was talking about yesterday, lobbyist bills make it through 30% of the time. I'm sorry, a lobbyist back bill make it through 50% of the time, and just a legislator makes it through 20% of the time. There's something wrong here. Let's switch gears. Let's talk about, as you know, this portion of the show is about small business. And we've got the epitome of small business here. Here's a guy that's, he was a veteran, came back out, been in the business, and gives great service.
Good morning, Carl.
Good morning. B&T Satellite. How are you doing, Doug?
Doing very well. How are you?
I'm doing great. And I see you brought somebody here with you.
Yeah, I got my brother Tibby with me.
Okay, and so Tibby is being quiet, though, today, even though he looks like he could speak. I've heard him talk earlier. So.
Yeah, he's pretty boisterous.
Tell people about the B&T Satellite.
Well, we're a local company. We started in 1999. We've been helping folks out. I started doing satellite work with DNL Satellite, Doug Drennan, back in 1985. My mom was engaged to his big brother, Jim, and great guys. And back in the 90s, they weren't keeping me busy enough, so I started B&T Satellite in March of 1999.
Well, and so you've been in, Did you do this when you said in March of 1999? Now, what
That's
exactly?
That's when I started BNT Satellite.
Right, but you've been in business, though, and helping since, what, about 1985?
85, though. Yeah. The big dishes.
Yeah.
I was the guy that crawled under the house and poked the wires up through the floor.
Well, you know, I could tell you stories when I was a plumber's assistant, how I crawled underneath houses, and I don't even want to begin to tell you what I found crawling under
there's
there.
There's some crazy stuff.
Oh, yeah, and you're trying to, and that's why plumber's helpers were, I mean, there's probably nasty stories up still about things that happen. Now, you provide dish.
Yeah, Dish Network.
And you've been talking about free HD.
Yeah, we have, right now, that's free HD? That's their big thing right now is free HD. So they came out and said that, you know, color TV's free. Why not make HD TV for free? So you have to jump through a few hoops. New customers, old existing customers qualify as well. There are some things that we have to do to get people qualified for it, but it's initially free TV or free HD, you know, so we're saving people $10 a month off of their normal package.
Right. Okay. We got to take a quick break here. When we come back, I want to talk about, you know, the business itself and some more about you and, you know, the fact, you know, we've had people call in thanking us, you know, for having, you know, for you as an advertiser because they've had really great service. And that's rare that we get people calling in on the air to tell us, hey, you know what? These guys are really good.
It was sure a blessing to hear you say that to me, too. I was blown away, got goose pimples when you told me the first time, and then it happened again. So
oh, it did? It has? Okay.
Yeah,
well,
so it's really cool.
All right. Well, this is Carl Lindebaugh, Free Fire Radio, KCNR 1460, Clearly News Talk Radio. Yeah, welcome back to Free Fire Radio on KCNR 1460 AM. It is 7:24 in the morning. You know what? I have been neglectful here about the weather. You know, right now it is 76 degrees because it's going to go up to 105 today. That's right, 105. But it is going to be sunshiny and it is going to be clear. But it's 76 degrees now. The weather is always brought to you by Anselmo's. It's not caused by Anselmo's. But if you go up to Anselmo's a Friday, if you go up for the lunches, they have serving great lunches. They have misters out there on the patio that keeps it cool, a lot of shade, but also air-conditioned dining rooms, too. Now, Friday is the next installment of the jazz series with Linda singing up there. Linda is going to have, of course, Rick Hill and Lou White. And the big thing is her piano player. Piano player is a gent named Devin. Now, Devin is about 19 years old, but Devin is getting ready to enter the Marine Corps at the end of the summer. And he has been signed up by the Marine Corps Band. Now, what's that mean? That means is that he's going into the United States Marine Corps. He's going through boot camp. He's going through the training. And then from there, he goes into the Marine Corps Band, one of the most renowned military bands in the world. They're called the President's Own. They're the ones that play. When you see the military bands at the White House and the red blouse and the white trousers, those are the Marines. And there, you know, if you remember, if you've heard of John Philip Sousa, was the leader of the United States Marine Corps Band and all the marches that he has written in all this Marine Corps Band. And our piano player, like I said, is going to be leaving in September, heading off the Marine Corps and heading off the Marine Corps Band. So it's going to be a great time out there. All right, our guest, if he survives, he's having a coughing fit out there. Doug Tooley from BNT Satellite. So tell us some more about the BNT Satellite. I mean, we're talking dish and we're talking about the area you cover here. And since as who your customer base around here, how far out do you travel?
Well, when we started in 99, most of my travel time was everywhere except for Reading because Dish Network at that time had a great promotion giving away TV like they do now, satellite service, not TVs, but satellite service.
Right.
And we were everywhere, Fall River Mills, Beaver, New Beaver, just going up and knocking on doors and saying, hey, we got a great way to save you guys some money. So we don't like the service those areas now because we're kind of, we go everywhere where there's people who need help, but with gas prices.
Like to concentrate more in here in the valley and everything. Yeah, I can understand that. The you've when we advertise for you and we talk about the things that you give, then every so often, though, there's like an organization that comes in from another area and is in, you know, is direct competition with our locals.
Right.
They have nothing to do with our local people here. And they hire kids to come out in what, in canvas
places? Neighborhoods, yeah. You see them, they have a little badge on that says Dish on one side, Direct on the other side. And what they do is they knock on your door. If you have a Dish Network dish on your house, they say, hey, you know, great, DirecTV has great deals. Or if you knock on their door and you have a DirecTV dish on your house, they say, oh, Dish Network's way better than DirecTV. And they switch you over. And then when they do that, they leave. They're gone. So, and then you're stuck calling Dish Network or DirecTV to get service.
As opposed to a local company here.
Right.
Yeah, see, and this is that's why I wanted to talk about this. You get people coming in, knocking on your door, say, hey, we'll switch over. The first question you should ask them is, do you represent a local company?
Right.
And
not do you live here local, because right. There's a lot of guys that, you know, they'll hire them. You know, because if you go to Craigslist, they're, you know, these guys are, you know, soliciting people to work here. That guy that answers that ad on Craigslist doesn't have the knowledge that a guy who's been doing it since he was 13 years old.
That's right. And then after they do it,
You
end up fixing it.
Yeah, and I get a lot of customers that come in and say, man, if I only would have known about you.
Well, now that's what we're trying to do is spread the word about the business and all our small businesses. That's why we try to do this every day or every other day, you know, as we can get people in to talk about small businesses here in town, because we need to save our small businesses, my friend. You know, if you get an opportunity to go to a big box store or one of our local businesses, you go to one of our local businesses. You know, the 60 to 65% of the money stays here in town. We're employing our local people. You know,
yeah, we employ five families that we feed,
and try to. But also as we you know, as these businesses grow, they do hire more locals, and the money stays here. So,
yeah, in 2006, excuse me, in 2006 we were up to 15 guys, and we had four people in the office running the 15 guys.
Mm-hmm.
And because we got a contract for the 800 number, you know, all these 800 numbers and the flyers that you get in your mailbox, these are all guys that are, you know, everywhere else, India, you know, because anybody can sell Dish Network. And we tried to pick up that little bit of the piece of the pie, and we just couldn't make it happen because, you know, they paid us so little. And we ended up having to, you know, let 20 guys go, basically.
Yeah. Okay, well, what do you want people to remember here? B&T Satellite.
B&T Satellite.
You give great service. I know that.
Yeah, we're very respectful. We take care of our customers incredibly well. We, you know, treat everybody like their family.
You know, that's a great line to leave with, Doug. Doug Tooley, B&T Satellite, we treat every one of our customers like family. You know, I believe that, too. Well, hey, thanks so much for coming in here, Doug.
Thank you, Carl.
I can highly recommend Doug Tooley of B&T Satellite. He's off Airport Road. The number is 244-1988. There you go. Hey, thanks a lot, Doug.
Thank you.
Hey, this is Carl Lindebottom, Free Fire Radio. KCNR 1460, Clearly News Talk Radio. Join us after these messages. We're going to be talking about a few things that are happening right here in River City. Yeah, welcome back to Free Fire Radio on KCNR 1460. It's Carl and Linda Bott. Good morning. It is 7:34 in the morning. It is going to be hot, my friends. 106 degrees today. Right now, it's 76 degrees. The weather's always brought to you by Anselmo. It's not caused by Anselmo. It's brought to you by Anselmo's. The thing about this, again, don't leave your dogs in the car. Don't leave your kids in the car. Wear light clothes. Drink a lot of water. Now, something happened yesterday I saw. It was a tragedy. There was a woman was found in her swimming pool and dead. Maybe had been there a couple of days, it looks like. If I could recommend something to you, you have elderly parents, you have elderly friends, you have friends that maybe aren't doing well health-wise, check on them. Do them a favor. Do yourself a favor. Give them a call. They don't get an answer. You know they're home. Go over and check on them. And this is really hot weather. You know, it can affect people differently. They could go for a walk and it hits them really hard. Go check on your neighbors. We take care of our own up here in the North State. If you don't know them and you haven't, but you see them regularly and you don't see them all of a sudden, then you need to check on them. You could save somebody's life. I see that Camp Pendleton's on fire. Camp Pendleton is where the Marines are stationed. A lot of the Marines that are over in Afghanistan and Iraq come out of Camp Pendleton. It says it's burning up Aliso Canyon, which means nothing to anybody unless you've been in the Marine Corps and stationed there at Camp Pendleton. But we used to spend a lot of the time during the summers, they'd have a battalion on alert going out there fighting fires. They'd fight fires because you need to train. So when you train, you shoot. And when you shoot, there's explosions. When there's explosions, there's fire. And then the fire would start. We've had fires that have reached all the way down to the freeway and stopped traffic. But, I mean, it's unbelievable. But every time I see that, there's a press release, oh, Camp Pendleton's on fire. It would burn up to the mountains right there. And so in the evening, you would see a line of fire, it looked like, in the sky as it burned up toward Cave Springs. For all you old Marines out there, you know exactly what I'm talking about. Hey, something happened on the Freedom of Information Act. I know it's, we went through the Freedom of Information Act, and this was before Mr. Obama, because he was a Mr. then, had selected his vice president. And he was talking to Joe Biden, it looks like. So we got a copy of this. So, Bob, play this copy and see. This is how the final negotiations were going on. So let's hear it, Bob.
Show me the money!
Show me the money!
Yes! Louder!
Show me the money!
That's it, brother, but you got to yell! I need to feel you!
Show me the money!
Show me the money! Show me the money! Show me the money!
I love black people!
I love black people!
What you gonna do?
Show me the money!
Congratulations.
Okay.
Carl?
What?
I think that's from a movie.
It is?
I think that's Cuba Gooding and Tom Cruise.
It is?
I think we've been had.
That's Jerry Maguire. You mean the person we said to get that from? It was wrong?
You paid good money for that.
Oh, okay. That wasn't the way that they appointed Joe Biden to vice president? Oh, gosh. I'm kind of surprised about that. Okay, let's just move on. It looks like that when we were talking about some other things, too, was that more and more of our resources are being spent on the immigration fight. That's right. 9 states have joined the state of Arizona to protect their borders. Michigan Attorney General Mike Cox said Wednesday in a legal brief on behalf of 9 states supporting Arizona's immigration law. Cox, one of the Republicans running for Michigan governor, said Michigan is the lead state backing Arizona in federal court and is joined by Alabama, Florida, Nebraska, Pennsylvania, South Carolina, South Dakota, Texas, and Virginia, as well as the Northern Mariana Islands. You know, the new Arizona law was getting ready to take place on July 29th, which guards their borders, and the Obama administration is fighting them. You don't have the right to protect your borders. That's the federal's job, they said in a self-satisfied little memo they sent out. Well, excuse me, you're not guarding the borders, and if you're not guarding the borders, it's up to the states to protect themselves, states' rights. I think it says is that if the federal government doesn't do something and it's legal, the states can do it. The feds are saying you don't have a right to make immigration laws. They're not. They are enforcing the laws of the federal government. Oh. So what does the Obama administration do? I mean, they've already made a debacle out of the Gulf oil disaster. I mean, it's more of a disaster because of the lack of attention of this administration. So what do they do when states are trying to stand up for themselves? They're under siege. Well, let's take the war to the state, not against the illegals. Do you see them putting people down there? You know, at the same time that Holder was going against and putting out legal briefs to stop the immigration, that mass illegal migration – across the border. If they at the same time had put 1,500 troops down there, 2,000 troops down there, and closed the border off, you wouldn't even be having this. You wouldn't even be having this. Instead, now you've got more and more states joining in. And I tell you what, the United States government doesn't take care of you. What are you supposed to do? Your citizens are under siege. What do you do? You know, I saw in the Record Searchlight, they said that Nielsen was being asked questions. And had a, you know, but then they said, you know, asking a number of questions when he was up here for a Tea Party event, which was, you know, great. The fact is, though, is that he said there seem to be a lot of people preoccupied with illegal immigration. It really doesn't impact on us. Wrong! It does impact on us. It impacts on our country. It impacts on the fact is that we do not control our borders. If we do not control our borders, anybody can come through. Record Searchlight, Bruce Ross. You know, we may not have a problem of illegal standing on every corner here in Redding, but I promise you they have that problem in San Diego. They have that problem in Orange County. They have that problem in L.A. And the fact is that it's facing us across the nation. That's why people are upset. They are upset because our borders are being ignored and our government's not doing anything about it. Carl Bott, Free Fire Radio, KCNR 1460, clearly news talk radio.
Hi.
Yeah, welcome back on Free Fire Radio, KCNR 1460. It's Carl and Linda Bott. Linda is on assignment, which means that she's doing a lot of things that keep us moving when I leave the show here. Phone lines here are 605-4567. We're streaming at KCNR1460.com. This portion of the show brought to you by Tobacco and Brew. 2143 Hilltop Drive. They're Espresso Joe's. It's a good place going to get that iced coffee. They have all these little iced drinks there the girls make for you. They are just outstanding. And you roll right in there to the tobacco portion of it and the walk-in humidor. Oh, my gosh. Great cigars, great prices. Tobacco and Brew, Joe and Shelley are great Americans. Support our community. 2143 Hilltop Drive. It's going to be 106 degrees today. It is 76 right now. It is going to be hot. It's going to be clear and sunny. I don't see any wind blowing through here. You know, the rest of this week's going to be hot, too. We're talking, 106, 108. It's going to be warm this week. Take care of yourself. Get lots of water. Don't leave the dogs or the kids in the car just when you're running in there for a quick, pull of the slot machines. Okay, then it happens, unfortunately. Okay, hey, you know, something, we've been doing some studies and for the military transitioning back to the civilian world, and it's been a little bit tougher than in past because we've got a tough job market, and the period of unemployment for most veterans is going up. Unemployment rate for former service members from Iraq and Afghanistan rose from 10% in May 2010 to 11.5%. in June 2010, according to the Bureau of Labor Statistics. A tight job market, though, is only part of the problem. A Society of Human Resource Management revealed that veterans face two major hurdles when finding civilian employment: translating their military experience into civilian skills and the hiring manager's lack of knowledge about policies designed to help veterans get employment. In other words, they've done jobs for the military. Our civilians have done jobs for the military, and yet it's hard for them to equate these skills to businesses out there. You know, you think if you're just an infantry, what's that do? Well, it's leadership. It's your ability to time manage. It's your ability to move object A to object B with minimum problems. It's in infantry there. If you're a rifleman, you can take orders and you can give orders. Leadership. Being able to take responsibility, it's huge, huge. But I think that doesn't transition across a lot of times. And a lot of times the managers don't know that there are programs out there. The study randomly polled 429 employers. They found that 60% of the hiring professionals said that many veterans report having difficulty writing resumes, interviewing, and adapting to workplace culture, in addition to not being able to explain their military skills. And even though 50% of employers surveyed report making a specific effort to hire veterans, a high amount of hiring managers were unaware of the Department of Labor's veteran employment initiatives. 68% were unaware of the local veterans employment representative. 70% were unfamiliar with the Disabled Veterans Outreach Program. So, see, that's partially our fault. You know, and we're taking a look at how can we do that right here at KCNR. How can we make this better? We have some of the greatest veterans organizations in the state, if not the whole United States, right here in Shasta County. The amount of people that care about what happens to our veterans is, you know, it is, people are so numerous. You've got people like John Kleckner. You've got people like Bob Dunlap and Dave Lanford and Greg Arapa. You've got so many people, Robert Burroughs, Charlie Williams, everybody, or Charlie Thompson. So many people are so concerned. They're so concerned about helping our veterans. So we should hear on KCNR and in all of the media. I'm talking reaching out to every radio station, the Record Searchlight and TV. How do we make it easier for our veterans to find these jobs? You know, 46% of hiring managers thought post-traumatic stress issues as well as other combat-sustained brain injuries would present a problem for veteran employment. However, you know, only 13% of employers actually reported having any issues with veterans. So here's the thing. Again, it's knowledge and education. It's helping the veterans get those resumes. It's helping them get through the that transition process. They started in the military. We have organizations out there that help too. One of the things you just heard on here as a service announcement was reaching out to Iraqi and Afghanistan veterans. And we're going to continue to do that here in the coming weeks. And you're going to see a new way of doing this here on KCNR that we can help push this to our veterans. We got to take a quick break here. It's Carl and Linda Bott, Free Fire Radio, KCNR 1460, Clearly News Talk Radio. Welcome back to Free Fire Radio on KCNR 1460. It's Carl and Linda Bott, and I just want Linda to know when she's not here, I walk the line. 7:55 in the morning. Phone lines here are 605-4567. It's going to be 106 degrees today. It's 78 right now. Let's go to the phones. Ron, good morning. You're on KCNR.
Yes, good morning. If Meg Whitman comes back up to talk to us again, I know Jerry Brown will come up and debate her. But anyway, I'd like to make a suggestion that when we're able to talk to her, that we'd be able to talk with an open mic so everybody can hear what she has to say or what we have to say to her. Because when I was standing there in line, there was at least two people who asked her the same question about school teachers and stuff like that. So anyhow, I'd like to make that suggestion. And also, I've worked in around the state, different places. And when I was in Nevada, I saw it over there. And also, I went up on the California side in Tahoe. Anyhow, you see the illegal aliens standing on street corners up there waiting to... If a truck goes by with, like mine, with a lumber rack, I mean, they mob you. They try to find out if you got work, and they're trying to get a job. So,
well, yeah, I know that. You know,
the problem is just absolutely everywhere. And the people in Nevada call into the talk show station up there, and they were complaining about all the illegal aliens, and they're trying to do something about it. Anyhow, the illegal aliens got irritated with them, and they had a march on the radio station up there out of Reno, Nevada.
Oh. So, well, come on.
I mean, they actually had a march, and to my way of thinking, I guess they can't do any more about it up there than what our sheriff can do about it here, but they should have had Greyhound buses lined up for a city block and put them on Greyhound buses and shipped them back to Mexico because they knew they were going to have a march. They publicized it.
Oh, I...
But anyway...
Hey, let them march. I think we'd have a great time with that one.
Well, they didn't do anything about it, and I guess there's really nothing they can do.
Well, see, they can't do anything about it, but the authorities can. You know, the thing is that if you just follow the laws, you can do that. So, hey, Ron, thanks so much for your phone call. Maybe we can get that. I think Meg Whitman is on her way up here.
Okay, good.
All right. Hey, thanks a lot. You know what? We just had a guest just drop by here, and we're going to talk to her. It's Judy Gama.
Hello. Good morning.
Good morning. And you're going to have this is for American Legion. If it wasn't for American Legion, I would have said, I don't think we can do this. But...
It's important.
It's important. American Legion's having Reading Auxiliary's having your annual rummage sale.
We absolutely are. It's this coming Saturday, July 17th, from 8 in the morning to 4 in the afternoon. It's going to be great. We have wonderful things, a lot of new things. Best of all, it's going to be air conditioned when it's so hot outside.
So you can come in and rummage around at the air conditioned building right there. It's going to be at the Veterans Memorial Hall. right next to the old post office, right there, 1605 Yuba Street.
Right.
And all the proceeds?
All the proceeds go towards helping all of the auxiliary projects that we work on in Shasta County. That includes helping the Veterans Clinic. It helps the Rescue Mission, many, many other things. Children of Veterans, lots of projects.
That's right. And you all do a lot of good things out there.
Thank you so much.
We're proud of our American Legion around here.
We absolutely are.
So how does now you're still taking stuff?
We are still taking things. How the American Legion Auxiliary makes their money is by running tables. There is a phone number that they can call if they still want to run a table. It's only $12.50 for one table, $20 for two. The number that they can call is 530-549-4032. If they're still interested in getting a table. They keep their own proceeds from what they sell, so it's great. We have a refreshment stand. It's going to be a good day.
So you're just renting tables, and everybody gets to keep the money they make.
Absolutely.
It's going to be a fun time down there.
Absolutely.
American Legion Reading Auxiliary Annual Rummage Sale, July 17th, this Saturday from 8 a.m. to 4 p.m. at the Veterans Memorial Hall.
Absolutely.
Right next to the Yuba Street Post Office, and free admission, and the snack bar will be available. Phone number is 530-549-4032. Rent a table.
Thank you so much.
Help our veterans.
Thank you.
No, thank you, Judy. Thank you. You know, it's an honor to help out with veterans around here. Okay, you know, we just got a couple minutes. Our guest, when we roll back after the news, will be Chief of Police Peter Hansen. We're going to be talking about crime. We're going to be talking about gangs. We're going to be talking about what's going on in the future, or what's going on now? Are we tying in what you're seeing with the marijuana plantations and the gangs were popping up now? Is that some kind of relationship getting ready to start, or are we going to be able to stop that? And what the community can do to help our police? I know that. And everything that comes up, we are going to be talking about it right here on Free Fire Radio. You want to know what's going on? You want to know what's happening in the town? You know, we'll have those people on. If there's somebody you want to hear on the radio, if you want to have us have somebody on that you find that you think it's going to be have an impact on our community, give us a call, drop us an email, Linda at kcnr1460.com. Give us a call at our office phone, 605-4565. Now, our open line is just that, 605-4567, to call in and make your comments, as Roger has and as Al has and as many, many others have. One last thing here in the last minute we have is, you ever wondered how much money the United States makes off of sin taxes? Americans paid $20.6 billion in sin taxes last year. That's taxes on alcohol, tobacco, firearms, and ammunition in fiscal year 2009, up 41% from the previous fiscal year. But could it be because we have a new administration? Could it be because people are buying guns and ammo at a cyclic rate out there because they feel like they need to protect themselves? They know that they know that there could be a chance of militias beginning. Well, we're going to talk about that too with the chief of police. He's out there right now. He's already bent over in pain. Join us after the news. Carl and the Bot, Free Fire Radio, KCNR 1460, clearly News Talk Radio.
You're listening to KCNR Shasta Redding.
Yeah, welcome back to Free Fire Radio on KCNR 1460. It's Carl and the Bot. Linda's out on assignment today. You know, it kind of gets dangerous when she's out on assignment because I'm never sure what she's quite doing on assignment. But, hey, our phone lines here are 605-4567. We're streaming at KCNR1460.com. Temperature today is going to be 106 degrees. It's going to be hot. It is 80 degrees. Is that right, Bob? Am I seeing that right?
It is currently 80 degrees. Yes.
Jumped up 4 degrees in about the last 15 minutes. That's great. Take care of your kids. Take care of your dogs. Don't leave them in the car when you're in there. Go running into the shopping place to get a cold bottle of milk. This portion of the show is brought to you by Cypress Square Barbershop. In the Cypress Square Shopping Center off Athens, D.C. Tim and the Man in Black. Great haircuts. They're barbers. That's exactly what they are. They're barbers. They cut hair. You're not going to have hair gel and all this stuff, maybe a little butch wax. great magazines, Man's Last Stronghold. That's Cypress Square Barbershop off Athens. Our guest today is Reading Police Chief Peter Hansen. Good morning.
Good morning, Carl.
I saw you outside doubled over when I was talking about, hey, starting our own militias here.
I was. I thought that was funny.
Yeah. So how many militias do you think are in the area? Just off the top of your head.
You know, I don't know. I know there used to be a formal militia that operated out of Shingletown, but I don't think it's in operation anymore. I'm not aware of any formalized militia in the Reading area, and I'm not even sure there's any operating in Shasta County anymore.
Okay. I'm just wondering, because I think, you know, the Jefferson State Militia and those, but I don't know if they, yeah. I don't know if they have meetings or anything.
Yeah. You know, that's very interesting history to research the state of Jefferson and go back and look at what they were contemplating back in the 30s, and, you know, they have their own website and stuff. That's very interesting history about how the states were formed and, you know, why that didn't come to pass and those sorts of things. But, hey, before we get too further, I'd like to congratulate you for the recognition you received a couple of weeks ago in Sacramento and tell you that I appreciate your service to our country and what you continue to do for our veterans in our community. That's really outstanding service, and I appreciate it very much.
You know, well, thanks, Chief. You know, it's you can't just pick out one. I like to think that anybody that's selected for this honor, and it is a great honor for for our veterans, is that, you know, one speaks for all the veterans. And if however you pick whoever that person then speaks for the veterans. And if it can enhance what we do for the veteran community, and for all those young men and women that are on the walls right now when they come back here, and for the ones that have served in the past, then yes, then we will embrace that honor, and then use that. I hate to use the word use it, but use that to make things even better for our veterans.
Yeah, it's important for them to have a voice, though, and you and, you know, Senator Johansson, people like that in our community who've been a voice, a strong voice for veterans and service to veterans and veterans' rights is really critical, particularly because we have so many in this area. So many people have served in the military, so many retired veterans living here. It's just really important to have that kind of commitment, and I appreciate it very much.
Well, thank you very much. You know, a lot of people, most everybody knows who you are, knows you are the chief of police, but they don't know a lot about you. Would you mind sharing some of your history with us, you know, your life here? I know you've been in Reading. And
yeah, sure. I was born in Minnesota, but I moved to California when I was 1 year old, and I grew up in Southern California, a charming community of San Bernardino. I went to high school there and early college, and then graduated from college in San Francisco State. Actually started a career headed towards teaching. I was working on my teaching credential, and while working my way through college, I began working as a park ranger, of all things, and law enforcement sort of perked my interest, and I went from working for the state of California to the Riverside County Sheriff's Department, then back to the state of California briefly before I came here in 1983. So I've been with the Reading Police Department for about 27 years. I worked my way up through the ranks. I spent many a day talking to Bob over here about news events, and worked in patrol and detectives and so on. As when Chief Modi became chief, I was promoted to captain. So I served the last 6 years before I became chief as the captain of patrol and investigations. So I've been here for, you know, a long time, almost considered a local, 27 years. So.
Yeah, it's pretty close, I think. It's family?
Family. A wife of, gosh, 29 years now, and two daughters. My oldest daughter is going to be a senior at UC Davis, and my youngest daughter just graduated from high school, and she is on her way to Cal Poly San Luis Obispo in the fall.
Big brain.
Yeah, well, they're both pretty sharp kids.
Yeah.
It's just been a real pleasure for us, and my youngest daughter is going to be studying architecture at the Cal Poly program, which is one of the finest in the country, so I'm very happy for her, and it's a great program. Some of our local leading architects in our community attended that school, and they just rave about how good it is. So, and of course, UC Davis has a tremendous reputation in the nation for a quality education, and yeah. We've been really blessed. They've done so well.
Well, okay, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, I want to start talking gangs. I want to talk about, all of a sudden, they've raised their ugly heads again, and I want to see if there's parallels between this and the marijuana problems we're having to the west and the north of us. And get your take on this and what we can as a community are going to be facing and what we can do. Carl and Linda Bott, Free Fire Radio, KCNR 1460, Clearly News Talk Radio.
Hello.
Yeah, welcome back to Free Fire Radio. It's Carl and Linda Bott. It is 8:13 in the morning. Good morning. Going to be 106 today. Our guest is Reading Police Chief Peter Hansen. We already have people lined up on the phones. John, you are on KCNR.
Good morning, Carl, Chief, and Bad Bob, of course. Chief Hansen, first of all, I'd like to congratulate you on your pending retirement and know that your even-handed management of the RPD has been a model for sensible protection to the citizens of Reading, and we really do appreciate it.
Well, thank you very much.
All that being said, there was a suggestion recently that your position not be filled, that it be bifurcated after you retire, having the city manager's office handle the administrative functions and the police duties be split among the captains. This may or may not be a viable idea, but what do you see, or how do you see ways that the city might be able to save enough money in through the department to be able to still maintain current patrol staffing levels?
Let me answer the second part of that question first. I think it's going to be enormously difficult for us to maintain the same level of service we have in the past. We are on course right now to lose or eliminate an additional 13 police officer positions from the police department between now and December of 2010. That is as a result of the declining economy and budget reductions. And so most of those 13 positions will be accomplished by officers who have chosen to retire early, and there will be a mixture of layoffs in there. We have already lost our four community service officers to layoffs that were assigned to patrol. So now officers are relegated to handling the low-priority calls for service instead of having time to be proactive. So by the end of this year, our circumstance will get significantly more challenging. We have, up until this point, prioritized our patrol services as the number one priority for the department. And any cuts we have made have been either to support staff or to officers assigned in specialty assignments such as the neighborhood police unit and traffic and some of the other auxiliary duties. So currently, our patrol staffing is as it was, absent any community service officers. So the next 6 months will be extremely challenging. The suggestion that was made about not filling my position, I disagree with. I think it's very important to have a police chief, not only to act as the leader of the organization, but as a spokesman for the department and law enforcement issues. And I believe I have the agreement of the city manager. But when you're looking at this number of cuts, this number of massive reductions to our department, and again, 13 police officers, pretty significant out of a force of 120. We started with 120, now we're at 110. We'll be down to 97 by the end of the year. One position, I don't think would save enough money to have that significant of an impact. I think what we need is to look at all possible alternatives, to find funding when it's available, and hopefully the economy starts to recover so we can start to rebuild the department.
You know, I agree with everything you said, including I think that it's essential. I voiced that suggestion that had been made. By the way, that wasn't mine. But I think it was important to consider that, but I think it's also important to identify the fact that we do need a head of ship. Removing the command element from the police department, I think, would be a serious mistake.
The Reading Municipal Code actually requires there to be a chief of police, so that would have to be changed as well. And different than, say, the sheriff, the chief of police is required to be a police officer now, or a sworn officer. And of course, all sheriffs in California are sworn officers as well, but that's not an actual requirement under the law. So a police chief has to have sworn peace officer authorities, and I agree that the leadership and the administrative skills necessary to run really a $25 million organization, you really need to have a person in charge.
If I may, I'd like to ask you one question about that. I saw a figure that kind of surprised me the other day that said that 56% of the entire city budget is law enforcement.
Well, that's not exactly correct. We're about 34-35% of the general fund, and the fire department makes up about 20-25%. So combined,
public
safety is closer to 50-55% of the general fund side of the budget.
Okay,
so that's why you're the target, huh?
Well, you know, we're the largest general fund department, and so, you know, we have to do our share because it's important for the city to have a balanced approach to the city services. And, you know, the Parks Department and the library and these other functions of the city help the department by keeping crime down. If the youth in our community have positive activities and positive places to go, that does help with our crime problem.
I'm going to get off the air and stop taking up all the time, but Chief, if you get a chance, could you address the concept of combining the police and sheriffs and how you feel about that?
Sure.
Okay, John, thanks a lot for your phone call.
Thanks, guys.
You bet. Chief, on the going back to the gangs here, we're going to take a break in a couple minutes, but Reading had a problem with gangs a couple of decades ago, if I remember right. It was pretty much stomped out. And now, all of a sudden, now we're seeing, you know, 3 or 4 days in a row that we had gang activity, but nothing really since then. I'm going to take a break early, and when I do, because I want to come back and discuss this. You know, all of a sudden we've got a lot of gang activity, and now we're seeing numbers 175. Other people say that's just the tip of the iceberg. I want to talk gang activity. What you're seeing, what the the climate in town is about it, that, you know, I don't want to see a the sky is falling type thing, and that's why, you know, one of the things that I really wanted you to come in here so we could address it and get the, you know, look at it in a logical approach. Carl Lundebot, Free Fire Radio, KCNR 1460, clearly News Talk Radio. Well, welcome back to Free Fire Radio. This is Carl Lundebot. Free Fire Radio, KCNR 1460. Linda is on assignment. Our phone lines here are 605-4565. This portion of the show is brought to you by Back Home Brew, 2143 Hilltop Drive. It's a great day. It's going to be 160 today to go in to Espresso Joe's and get that icy drink, to get that slushy type drink, to get that iced coffee, to get that mango drink that they serve. It is outstanding, but it's never too late then to go over and get a good cigar for later on when it cools off. That's Tobacco and Brew, 2143 Hilltop Drive. So much more than just a tobacco emporium. And our guest is Chief of Police, Peter Hansen. Gangs. That's when I called you originally. Come on, I wanted to talk about gangs.
Okay.
We had an incident, I think, about 3 weeks ago now. And
right.
Like three incidents in 3 days.
Yes. You know,
of course, one of them I look at as a complete scumbag idiot shooting somebody by accident. You know, in the back seat. At least it's what it appeared to be. And it was a member of the gang. Of course, I could be wrong about that. And then the other two were really gang stuff.
Right.
What's going on?
Well, let's look at this historically first. The United States, and I'm sure every community around the world, has some element of gang activity within every community. For whatever reason, people join gangs for turf or for protection or for family relationship building. And you look back in the early, you know, the 1800s when we had all the immigrants coming from Europe, and we had Irish gangs, we had Jewish gangs. I mean, it's just part of what our culture is. And there are always going to be some level of gang presence in every community. The key part is it under control? Does it raise its ugly head? Does it exert influence on your community so much that it changes people's behavior? Are you afraid to go in a particular neighborhood because of the presence of gangs? And unfortunately, if you look across California, there are many communities and many neighborhoods where people are afraid to go into the neighborhood or even go out of their house because of the activity of gangs. And that's what we have been trying to preventively keep under control. Now, what happened in the early 90s is that we had an influx of gang activity in Reading. There was we had about 12 shootings in the course of a year, and mostly involving gang members who are Southeast Asians, many of them from Sacramento and so on. And very significant problem. Chief Blankenship at the time was very proactive in addressing this. He provided a lot of community education, and there was a lot of denial at the time about a real gang problem before that. So, you know, we started a gang investigative unit and got agencies working together, and really with the probation department, the district attorney's office, and the judges here who are very tough, we got a lot of that under control. And we've maintained that strong anti-gang posture, not only in the police department, but a real zero-tolerance attitude in our community. And the community's zero-tolerance attitude is very important. What's happened recently is we've had an influx of some out-of-town gang members, and these typically known as Hispanic gangs. However, they are not all Hispanic anymore. They are involving people from across racial barriers.
So you're saying they become an equal opportunity employer?
Right, and they're recruiting from, you know, across, you know, whites and blacks and Asians into these groups. And we had some pressure being applied, some threats being applied, and that escalated to violence. And, you know, violence begets other violence, and then we had a series of incidents in a short period of time. I'm proud to say, however, that of the significant number of incidents we had in a short period of time, we've identified four suspects who were involved. Three of them are in custody. We have a warrant for the fourth, and he's believed to be in the Bay Area. We're actively seeking him right now. One of the difficult things about investigating gang crimes is that the person that is the victim or the witness today is the suspect of tomorrow. It's also very difficult to get these people in these little groups to communicate with us. So our guys have done a good job, you know, keeping this under control. But we're taking a kind of a four-step approach. The first step is that when a crime occurs is to investigate, apprehend, arrest, prosecute, heavily prosecute these folks for the gang crime. The second step is community education, and that's an ongoing process through the media, through the schools, and through a series of, we're going to have some neighborhood meetings to talk about gang things. We need to keep the community aware of what's going on. Step three is to gather intelligence, work within the groups, work within the minority communities, work within these different neighborhoods to gather intelligence, gather information, get informants developed so they know what we know what's going on. And lastly, we have to have a very proactive presence in the community. Now, we got a lot of assistance from the Sheriff's Office and the Highway Patrol after those events occurred. We brought in a lot of extra officers for about 2 weeks every night to go to these areas where these crimes were occurring and have a heavy law enforcement presence to kind of get things back under control.
Well, you know, so what you're telling our community here is that things are under control, that it's, while there has been a problem there a few weeks ago, that you believe that you've got the clamp on it?
I think we do. I would not say that it's eliminated, and it would be naive of me to say that, you know, we've got everything under control, because we don't, and it can rear its ugly head very quickly. And we do need to be concerned about these people that come from outside the community to try and exert their influence. You know, we have, and that's what happened in this particular case. So we do need to be ever vigilant. And I think the fact that most people in our community do not perceive there to be a gang problem is important, because that doesn't happen by accident. That takes a lot of hard work to keep gangs out of our community.
Okay, we've got a couple minutes left. Let's go to the phones. Dave, good morning.
Hey, is this me?
Yep, it's you.
Hey, Carl, this is Dave. Hey, I was just going to ask the chief about, I don't know if they did it before, if it was deputized or just civilian patrols, civil patrols, that could be eyes and ears for the PD and so on in the city, drive around with signs or things on the car doors and uniforms and so on, people that want to do this voluntarily. You know, I know they did it in Shasta Lake City, Central Valley years ago. I don't know if they still do it now, but what about that concept?
Hey, Dave, we've got to take a break here, but it's a great question, and we are going to address that. We, in fact, we talked a little bit about it during the break and about that.
Okay.
But we do need to talk about this, so thanks a lot for your phone call, and we'll get to it right after our news break.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir. Okay, we've got about a minute left. Before we get in, let me follow up this last one with gangs. Then, is there an influx of people, young people that have been in trouble into our community under some kind of housing things or anything like this?
Yeah, Redding and Shasta County are the home to numerous group homes, and what happens is that, for example, a young person that gets in trouble in Alameda County on probation for a series of crimes is sent a group home in Shasta County to reside.
Well, let's keep that one in mind too as we go for our break. Carl Lindebaugh, Free Fire Radio, right here on KCNR 1460. Our guest, Police Chief Peter Hansen. Join us after this news break. Clear News Talk Radio.
Clearly News Talk Radio.
Yeah, welcome back to Free Fire Radio. Carl Lindebaugh. 8:34 in the morning. Wouldn't it be great to have Dennis Miller come up here and do a concert and have the proceeds go to veterans organizations in here? I think that he'd do something like that. Maybe get Gary Sinise And his band, hey, would that be great? The Lieutenant, Lieutenant, whatever his name was.
Lieutenant Dan?
Lieutenant Dan Band. You know, that's pretty cool. Hey, this portion of the show brought to you by BNT Satellite. Speaking of veterans, Doug Tooley, the owner of it, has been helping people with dish satellites since 1985. He's a veteran of the 82nd Airborne. You know, he's a good guy, and he does great work. He guarantees his work. He's a local guy. And you go down there. It's off of Airport Road, just down from the Burrito Bandito. And we've had people call in and tell him what a great job he does. That's Doug Tooley. His phone number is 244-1988. Our guest is Chief of Police Peter Hansen. We've had lots of questions from people, calling in. We were talking about, then again, is the gang numbers, these group houses. Can you address that, Chief?
Yeah, a couple of questions. We have several group homes in our community in Redding and Shasta County, and many of these group homes house young people from other communities around California that have been sent here. They're on probation. They've committed crimes in these other communities, and they're sent here to get away from their own problems. They're on probation in other counties, but the Shasta County Probation Department does a good job monitoring these folks. Many of them go to the Oasis Community School, but the fact that we are importing some of these people that have had gang ties and gang crimes is has a negative influence, and so we work closely with the probation department to kind of monitor these folks. We have about 175 documented gang members in town. Now, those are the people that we know about and have met a certain list of criteria that will document them as a gang member. There's a certain checklist we have to go down. A
couple of examples.
You know, gang tattoos, whether they admit to it, whether or not they participated in a gang crime, you know, whether or not they've been, we have photographs of them participating in gang photos or gang activities, those types of things. And it's the totality of the circumstance that will make them qualify as a gang member. Now, are there more gang members than that? Most certainly, because we have friends, associates, people that we haven't contacted, and people that haven't quite met all the criteria. They're still active in gangs and that sort of thing. So there's a lot of additional people in our community that participate in gang stuff. So our job is to keep them under control and keep them out of sight, out of mind, so they don't influence, they don't have control, they don't intimidate, you know, the local community, whether it be business or in your neighborhood. They're going to exist, but if they're out of sight, out of mind, that's probably the best we're going to be able to hope for. And they don't do crimes that can harm someone else. You know, the incident on Cypress Avenue where the woman was shot in the back, you know, she was the driver. That could have led to a very serious traffic accident, or the weapon being discharged could have struck someone. It could have been a real tragedy. And unfortunately, she was the only one that was injured, but it's still a real tragedy and could have been much worse.
Absolutely. And, okay, so the number of gang members that has been identified, it could be double that, because some of them haven't reached that last criteria of it. You believe, as the police department with the sheriff and the highway patrol, that this is under control right now, that people can walk through their neighborhoods? I assume they feel safe.
I hope so. And, you know, Chief Modi started a program called SAGE, which is Shasta Anti-Gang Enforcement, and it's a kind of a handshake agreement between 19 different law enforcement agencies to get together and combat the influence of gangs in our community. So we put out teams of officers from all these different agencies, you know, once a week or so to try and send a strong message to these folks that, you know, gang activity is not acceptable. The problem we've had lately over the last year or two is that all the agencies have been hit very hard economically, and they've had diminishing resources. So the level of participation from these agencies has been cut back. So we've asked them to consider, you know, upping their participation. And the Sheriff's Department and when we're in Anderson, the Anderson Police Department and the Highway Patrol have just been very supportive.
Great. Now, one of our caller asked about citizens on patrol.
Right. The Shasta County Sheriff's Department has an active citizens patrol program in Shasta Lake City and Shingletown around the county. And the Anderson Police Department has an active citizens patrol program. The Redding Police Department has never had one, and I'm actually interested in a program like that, particularly one that would address having eyes and ears, as the caller said, in our parks and trails, because we have a vast parks and trails program here in the community. It's really one of our best assets. And The problem is that to properly administer and to start up a program like that requires training and oversight. And I've got the material from the Shasta County Sheriff's Office. You know, they require a 3 or 4 week training program for the citizen volunteers. It's a very extensive, very well put together program. And quite frankly, I don't have the resources right now to get a program like that started. And one of the mistakes I think that some people think is that, you know, that can somehow substitute for less policemen, and that is absolutely not the case, because they can only act as eyes and ears, and they can only report. And if a citizen does become actively involved as part of a citizen's patrol, they can become injured or certainly creates a lot of liability. So eyes and ears is a great program, but it requires some training and oversight.
But that's a huge benefit to the police department if you got an organized group. What about, you know, I mean, we can just throw this around all day, but I know there's retired policemen maybe that would volunteer their time to give the classes to volunteers. I mean, then the only thing you have to do is find a place for them.
Right. And so that is a goal of mine, to try and get a program like that started. But again, it's a new program for us and requires some oversight and careful administration of a program.
Right.
But again, we have to get beyond the thought process that somehow that would substitute and you need less officers.
No, because what they would do is it would probably result in more calls.
Right.
And because you want to keep your area safe.
That
and
is
as
correct.
We talked about earlier, then if we don't have that, perhaps we should, you know, start having our street militias. You know, the Placer Street Militia. You know, we you know, every Thursday night we get up, we clean our weapons, you know, and we put eyes on target out there. Okay.
National Night Out is coming up here August 3rd.
And
Active Neighborhood Watch program is very important. And every one of us now has a cell phone. And I really strongly encourage people, everyone, to act as a Neighborhood Watch member, no matter where they're at in the community, to call and report when they see things going on.
If you see people that you haven't seen before in the neighborhood, groups of people kind of wandering around, I mean, is that something to call, to have somebody come by?
Absolutely, particularly if they're operating suspiciously. If they're doing something suspicious and it doesn't fit in the neighborhood and something doesn't look right, call and we'll try and get there to come check it out. Maybe it's nothing. You know, probably 99% of the time it might be nothing, but there might be that 1% of the time where we want to come see what's going on, find out who these people are, what are they doing here.
Okay. Hey, Carl and about Free Fire Radio on KCNR 1460. Our guest is Chief Peter Hansen. We've got to take a quick break here. We're going to come back. We're going to talk about a few things about the judicial system here in town. Join us after these messages. So welcome back to Free Fire Radio. It's Carl and Linda Bott. Linda's out on assignment today. It's 81 degrees. It's going to get up to 106. Weather's always brought to you by Anselmo Vineyards. And you know what? It's 10 degrees cooler up there. Plus, they're serving lunch every day. And they have the patio misters, which really cools it off even more. And then they have air-conditioned dining rooms up there. This Friday, Linda and her friends are going to be performing up there on a jazz night with Rick Hill and Lou White, a piano player. And this is really cool. The piano player, Devin, is 18, I think he's maybe 18 or 19 years old. At the end of the summer, is going to be joining the Marine Corps. And he is qualified to the fact he'll go through boot camp and he'll go through infantry training, and then he goes and becomes a member of the Marine Corps band after like 6 weeks of training or 6 months of training. He then joins the Marine Corps band, which plays for the president, and you know they're called the president's own, the Marine Corps band. I think that's great. He's going to be playing. What a great piano player this kid is. I mean, he is. I mean, unless you heard him, you wouldn't believe it. But anyway, Friday night, that's going to be at Anselmo's. You got to make reservations because the place is usually sold out. Anyway, okay, our guest is Chief Peter Hansen, and we've been talking gangs. We've been talking crime. We've been talking about, cops on patrol. I can't help it, you know, but I think back to that, you know, the whatever that series was, you know, when they had citizens on patrol with that group from Police Academy. And all the things that happen, I can just picture things like that. But to me, it's funny. You're probably picturing things in real life like that. What's the future here in Reading on crime?
Well, we're going to come out with our mid-year report here in a few weeks, and we're starting to see an increase in crime. And really, what's concerning is last year when the economy went so bad and the unemployment went so high. Crime actually decreased a little bit, and that's very unusual in that normally when the economy is bad and unemployment goes up, crime goes up. And this is one of the only times in history when that has not been the case. The Great Depression was another time, for example. But that's starting to change. And I think all the agencies are going to start seeing increase in crime, increase in thefts, increase in embezzlements, and increase in violent crime as people become more and more frustrated with their situation. And the other thing that's going to happen is as resources begin to diminish across our community and across the state, the communities will become more and more vulnerable to crime. You know, we've seen a lot of layoffs being discussed in some of the big cities, and they're really starting to see.
I see Oakland dropped off 88 officers out of that group. Like they haven't had a they don't have a problem already.
Stockton, Sacramento, all the major cities, and all the small cities are being hit by this. And our ability to keep control over the criminal element of our community is becoming tougher, and we're all starting to have to prioritize and set aside certain programs we used to do before. So ultimately what that means is we need more community involvement, more community willing to pick up the phone, call the cell phone, and say, hey, you know, this is going on. We don't want people to stop reporting. What we want is people to become more involved, more aware of their surroundings. And
so you want more community involvement. You want to be able so that you can, okay.
Well, and they need to protect themselves.
I'm glad you said that.
And what I mean is, you know, lock up your belongings, keep an eye on your neighborhood, keep an eye on your neighbor. And, you know, monitor your own behavior and activities so that you have to become more responsible, because the reality is our ability to provide, you know, a fast, efficient service and do all these extra things we used to do is just not going to be possible.
Right. So I believe one of the things we talked about with people was having an alarm system on their homes, if they can do that.
Alarm systems are great. Alarm systems on your car. Just make sure you lock up your belongings, because you want to prevent the opportunist, you know, the guy wandering by, sees your garage open it late at night and steals something out of your garage. You want to try and prevent that. Closing your garage, locking up your property, being aware of your neighborhood, and when you see those people in your neighborhood that don't belong or you've not seen before, either at your neighbor's house or wandering down the street, pick up the phone and call. I'm very concerned that people will become so worried that the police department is overwhelmed that they'll stop calling. And what will happen is the crime still occurs. They just won't call, and then artificially crime goes down, and because it's not being reported.
Right. Well, you know, the armed citizen, people that are protecting their own homes. You see that as a deterrent to bad guys?
You know, I think it is, and law enforcement has nothing to fear from a law-abiding citizen being armed and protecting themselves. And, you know, we've had many circumstances where a citizen has detained someone or has used a firearm to protect themselves appropriately and legally, and that's fine. It's the illegal use of firearms and the illegal possession of firearms that are concerned to law enforcement. But the law-abiding citizen, if they so choose, have the proper training and so on, and, you know, choose to arm themselves to help protect their property, that's fine.
You know, the concealed carry permit that the sheriff's office can issue. The background check, if you look at everything that disqualifies you from having a weapon in the state of California, I mean, it's pages of stuff. And it appears that if you've been, you know, if you have been gone through the background check and have a weapon issued to you, is that you've never been in trouble in your life.
Right. And historically, you know, the people that have been issued a permit by the sheriff's office generally are good character, good citizens. And rarely, if ever, do we have a problem or issue with a person issued a valid CCW permit. It is extremely rare when that occurs, if ever.
Okay. We got to take a break here before we get to our final segment. Our guest is Chief Peter Hansen. We've been talking crime and the help that the community can do, the upcoming, hopefully, citizens' activities that can help the police that was going to be started. Carl and Linda Bott, Free Fire Radio, clearly News Talk Radio.
Back down. No, I won't back down. You can stand me up at the gates of hell, but I won't back down.
Welcome back to Free Fire Radio, KCNR 1460, and we won't back down. We won't back down to crime, criminals. We won't back down to government oppression. We won't back down. Stand up and be somebody. Peter.
I think that's really important.
Yes.
You know, a lot of people are afraid and intimidated by criminal activity. What I'd rather see happen is let's put them on the defensive. Let's let them know that this community won't tolerate gang activity or any other sorts of criminal activity. And let's let the criminals know when they come to Redding, California, not only do they have a proactive police department, but they have an active community that if you're doing something wrong, they're going to call, and we're going to put them on the defensive so they're the ones that are afraid to go in your particular neighborhood and start acting up. And that's the ideal model. You know, we were talking off the air about, you know, having sheep and sheepdogs and wolves. You know, there are wolves in our society that prey. You know, most people are good, they work hard, they follow the rules, and they contribute to society in a very positive way. And we have wolves. Those people are evil, and they prey on the weak. And I think if we work together as a community, law enforcement community standing together, the law enforcement agencies joining forces, and we have the support of the community, you know, we can chase those wolves away.
Time to stop being sheep. You know, and let me tell you something, there's sheep herders. And what do sheep herders do? They watch what's going on and turn the sheep dogs loose.
That's right.
I mean, if you want to just use analogies like this.
You know, what's funny is that genetically, the sheepdog and the wolf are close because they're both from the canine, right?
Right.
The difference is discipline, training. The sheepdog would never turn on the sheep, and the sheepdog protects the sheep. And because of discipline and training and because of the shepherd,
that's right,
they have a mission. And like the military stands up to protect us, like law enforcement does, like public safety does, like fire department does, they stand, you know, between evil and good.
And that pretty much kind of like sums it all up. We talked a little bit about this. We like to see you stay, Chief. It's a tough time. We'd like to see you stay.
You know, I appreciate that. These are very difficult times, and we're facing more difficult times in the future. And I appreciate your comments, and I appreciate the support that I've received from the community very much.
Okay. You know, one of the things that we were talking about is, and working, of course, with you is finding out the problem, how we as a community can stand up to gangs. And we've talked about this before in other groups, you know, is to, you know, maybe have a, you know, rally. Maybe it is to set up things to say, hey, we won't accept gangs, we won't accept crime. Let's go on to the phones. Leon, you're
good
on
morning.
KCNR. We only got a couple minutes now.
Good morning.
Good morning.
I was, my take on a lot of this activity, the gang activity, is that usually it's a older person and they're recruiting like teenagers and people like that, you know. I was just wondering if there was a curfew in the town or not.
There is a curfew in town. It's 11 p.m. It coincides with the motor vehicles code regarding when minors have to be, you know, off the streets and that sort of thing. But 11 p.m. is the curfew. But you are correct. The one gang member that we arrested from outside the area that was involved in the crimes here was an older guy, came to town, was trying to influence young people in our community to follow the gang ways. So there is a lot of truth to what you said about this this organized effort to try and influence our young people.
Leon, thanks a lot for your phone call.
Thank you.
We don't have time for this. Maybe we can bring you back again, Peter. But gangs, marijuana. Do you see people? You see them positioning themselves? Only got like a minute here.
There is, in my belief, there's a direct connection between organized criminal street gangs and organized prison gangs and the Mexican drug cartels, which control a lot of the marijuana growing and distribution in California, particularly the large gardens outside of the city. There is a direct connection between all of this activity, and they work together for financial benefit as well as the transportation of these illegal drugs, and they support each other. So the Mexican drug cartels are tied into the prison gangs, which are tied into the street gangs. And I think we need to support our sheriff, and he's doing a good job with the eradication in Shasta County. And, you know, we support him and what he's doing.
Absolutely. Hey, our guest today has been Police Chief Peter Hansen. And, Peter, thanks so much for, you know, being on here today talking about this. You've been very forthcoming in your answers here. You know, tomorrow we have the day where, yes, we're going to be able to talk about small businesses. We're going to be talking some things that are happening over the weekend. But then we're going to be going open line. We're going to try this on, keep doing this on Fridays. This is a completely open line from 8 o'clock on that we can talk about anything. We can talk about why the U.S. government is picking and choosing which federal laws it wants to enforce. Like, oh, we'll enforce, you know, we will fight the states on illegal immigration, Arizona, yet we'll come to California and say, hey, grow marijuana. We won't touch it. That's a state issue. And where Arizona's fight against the illegal immigration is not a state issue all of a sudden. You know, why is that? What is going on in Afghanistan and Iraq? And please keep this in mind. in the last 6 weeks. We've lost 125 U.S. and NATO soldiers in Afghanistan. Remember our warriors. Remember what they're doing. Remember what they stand for. Don't forget them. Carl and Abbott, just remember it's the good guys against the bad guys. Which are you?
You're listening to KCNR, Shasta, Redding.